1241 KWHI, AM 1280, and FM 101.7. I'm now joined in studio by U.S. Congressman Michael McCaul. Of course, McCaul, a member of the House Homeland Security Committee and the top Republican on the Foreign Affairs Committee. And Congressman McCaul, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
No, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, very nice to have you with us. And we'll be talking a little bit about the situation in Afghanistan as well as at the U.S.-Mexico border because, of course, many things happening in those regions at this point in time.
Right.
So if we want to go ahead and get started with the situation in Afghanistan, kind of given the general overview, the Taliban quickly taking over after President Joe Biden announced he would pull American troops out of the country. Can you tell us from your perspective what led to this current situation that we're seeing?
Well, it was a self-inflicted wound, in my opinion. I call it an unmitigated disaster of epic proportions. I think it's going to be a stain on this presidency, and I think in a lot of respects, he has blood on his hands for how he did this. The decision was made, when we were moving forward, I urged the administration to start evacuating these interpreters that worked with our combat forces, with the Afghan partners, and it got worse and worse. The thing is, the intelligence community was right on this from day one. Since the decision, they basically were telling us that the conditions were deteriorating rapidly, that the Taliban was going to take over the country, that the Afghan army without our support could not sustain this surge from the Taliban. Between that and then losing our intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance capability when Bagram shut down and the embassy itself, we have no intelligence on the ground in Afghanistan anymore, no eyes and ears, no way to monitor the threat from within Afghanistan or Russia, China, and Iran in the region. This is, I think, one of the worst foreign policy mistakes I've seen, other than Jimmy Carter. I'm seeing a lot of parallels here between Carter and what happened in Iran with the embassy. A lot of people compare it to Saigon. I think this is going to be worse than Saigon because you're going to be left with a very full fighting terrorist force. They never cut their ties to Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda has a larger presence there today than it did before 9/11. So I think we're going to return to pre-9/11, and with that, the terror threat's going to rise.
You mentioned a little bit about the intelligence that you and the different committees received. What sort of things were you and other officials provided that indicated the decision that now was not the time to leave Afghanistan?
Well, the president made this decision over the recommendations of his top generals and the intelligence community, warning him that it should be conditions based. And Biden likes to blame former President Trump for all this. I've talked to his top national security advisors. This was always going to be condition based, and that means conditions on the ground. President Trump would never have allowed the Taliban to basically unconditionally surrender to the Taliban and allow them to take over Afghanistan. In his words, I don't want another Saigon on my watch. They would have brought in B-52s, F-18s, and bombed the Taliban. And now we're begging the Taliban to please let us evacuate out of this airport. It is a real showing of weakness. Weakness invites aggression. We have diminished our standing on the world stage now. And quite honestly, it's an embarrassment for America, but it's a real setback for the Afghan people. And most of all, I worry about the women and the girls left behind who are now being sold off to the Taliban and the warlords where they treat them like property.
Yesterday, President Biden defending his decision to do this, saying there was, quote, never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces, and that the U.S.'s responsibility in Afghanistan wasn't meant to be, in his words, nation building. What is your response to that if after 20 years of conflict, Afghanistan wouldn't be in a position to be able to stand on its own without American intervention?
Yeah, and we're going to do a review of the last 20 years. I think we made mistakes in Afghanistan. I'll be honest. I think occupying a country that's been occupied for thousands of years probably was not a very good military strategy. What I've always argued for is a counterterrorism footprint. When Obama and Biden pulled out of Iraq completely, then we saw the rise of ISIS and the caliphate. I was in the White House with President Trump advocating for a light footprint in Syria. And I think we can be hypothetical, but I think he would have been persuaded that a light footprint with our air coverability would continue to stabilize the country. The worst result is to precipitously withdraw without conditions based. And remember, everybody goes back to this February agreement. That agreement was condition based on them, Taliban, cutting their ties with Al-Qaeda. They never did that, and they were not supposed to attack the capital cities. They violated that as well. I don't think President Trump would have had a retreat and unconditional surrender. I think the light footprint and the intelligence that we get on the ground was a small price to pay. Now, look, history will judge. And when the Taliban flag is raised and hoisted up over our United States embassy, that's an image in the American experience that I think is going to be devastating.
You mentioned the Taliban agreement. Do you think President Donald Trump shares any of the blame in this situation? I mean, like you mentioned, of course, there were things in the agreement to try to specify that, you know, Taliban would not maintain these ties with Al-Qaeda or anything of that nature. So what is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I never had a whole lot of hope in negotiations with the Taliban. It's kind of like negotiating with the Ayatollah. Taliban are very brutal, tribal people. They treat women like property. They are in Sharia law, 7th century AD. They're really, really backwards. They're bad people. I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in that. And I would talk to our special envoy to Afghanistan who was negotiating with the Taliban, and I would get updated on it. I never had a whole lot of hope that that was going to bear any fruit down the road. Unfortunately, the Biden administration held on to that to just a couple of days ago, talking about a breakthrough negotiation with the Taliban. That was never going to happen. The intelligence community told me that all they're doing is playing us. They're waiting it out. Their line is, you have watches, we have time. And they were waiting this out. They did. And then when Biden gave a time certain, September the 11th, which I questioned that judgment, a time certain and an unconditional withdrawal, that's when the Taliban went on the rise. And now we're seeing the devastating impact.
All righty. Well, shifting gears now to talk about immigration at the U.S.-Mexico border. Last month, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection releasing statistics showing that during July, approximately 212,672 people were encountered at the border. That's the highest amount seen in a month in 20 years. What do you believe is the primary cause of this?
Yeah, it's very clear. When I've been down there many times. I chaired Homeland Security Committee. I was a federal prosecutor, Western District with the border. I've never seen it this bad, Josh. I've never seen it this bad. Thousands crossing every day. I predicted last spring we'd have 1 million people by the summer, and we're seeing that. But getting back to your question, the cause and effect's very clear. And the Border Patrol agents will tell you down there what happened. On Inauguration Day, President Biden, with the stroke of a pen, rescinded the Remain in Mexico policy and the asylum cooperation agreements with Central America. Those two rescissions had a direct cause and effect on this surge of migrants. Why? The traffickers are smart. They know our laws. They know our policies. Deterrence works. There is no deterrence. And now we're seeing thousands a day pouring over because they know, Josh, if they get touch foot in the United States under this administration, they can stay. And what we did with President Trump was we were able to secure the border, not only with the wall, everybody talks about that, but with these agreements with Mexico and Central America, which if they touch base to apply for asylum, they had to go back to Mexico or Central America, and about 85% don't qualify for political asylum. It was working. And I know everything Trump, he reverses except the February agreement that we're talking about. And he did it just because it was Trump's policy. I think they failed to understand that this policy was working. And Josh, until we get back to that policy, we're going to continue to have this problem. And we're getting not only the children going in that are going to go to the traffickers, but we got a lot of bad actors and a lot of drugs coming in, particularly fentanyls, that are killing our young people here in the United States.
Speaking about the Remain in Mexico policy, the migrant protection protocols, debate's kind of ongoing on whether that policy is legal and whether it can be enforced. On Friday, there was a federal judge in Texas that ordered the Biden administration to enforce that policy. If that's reinstated, what does that entail?
It means we go back to a policy that worked. I applaud the attorney general in Texas. We filed the lawsuit. There's no way this administration will return to Remain in Mexico unless the courts force them to. But what it means is that they will remain in Mexico pending their asylum claim. If their claim is adjudicated that they have a legitimate fear of persecution based on race, religion, then they can come in. That's the way our system's always worked. But if they don't qualify, most are running from economic poverty. If they don't qualify, they have to go back to their country of origin. So this effectively kept them out of the United States. Now, if they touch foot, they used to be given a notice to appear and they wouldn't appear in court. Now, my understanding is, talking to my friends down there, they're not even given a notice to appear anymore in court. They're just let into the country. Title 42, if that's rescinded, then you're talking about, it already presents not only a drug and criminal threat, but it also is a health threat when you got COVID immigrants coming in. And I would argue at the end of the day, a national security threat, because we don't know who's coming in. And with the terror threat now rising, thanks to Biden's decisions on Afghanistan, God forbid we have a terrorist coming across.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott and federal officials have been kind of locking heads over this issue recently, because earlier this month there was a federal judge that blocked Abbott's order that would have allowed them to direct state troopers to pull over drivers carrying migrants, and redirect them to their origin point. U.S. Department of Justice said it would disrupt federal immigration operations, and some argue it could lead to racial profiling. In these circumstances, do you think Abbott's order would be the correct move?
Yeah, I was a federal prosecutor for a long time. I think federal, state, and local partnerships in law enforcement work really well. There's a program 287G that would allow us to train local law enforcement who agree to work with the federal government. They don't have to, but where we would train them. We appropriated monies to do that. I think this has to be, because the federal government has failed and failed the people of Texas, the state is stepping up to the plate, and our state troopers are in a very good position to assist in this operation. You go down to the Rio Grande, down the RGV sector, Rio Grande Valley sector, you go on these DPS, Department of Public Safety, boats that are very equipped with weaponry to provide a deterrent effect. The state and DPS have been working side by side with Border Patrol for quite some time, and I think this is just another, it's a liberal Biden Justice Department policy trying to once again open up the border.
Okay, and we'll conclude with this question. Some argue that undocumented immigrants are a large reason for the recent spike in COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in Texas and around the country, with voices like Abbott and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis blaming President Biden's immigration policies. There is evidence suggesting that those cases are instead because of low vaccination rates, decisions from those states to dissuade or even prevent local governments from kind of taking action and implementing stricter COVID protocols. Do you think there's blame on one side or the other, or do you think it's a shared blame?
I think it's a combination. I think you have a lot of people crossing the border that are infected with COVID, which is why it's a health threat to the people of Texas and the United States. But also, if you look at the hospitalization rate and those who are being hospitalized, majority of them are not vaccinated. So what does that mean? I the government's never going to mandate that you get the vaccine, and that should never be the policy. I personally got it. We encourage that, but we can never force that. But I think the more people that are vaccinated, but if you don't want to be vaccinated and you do get COVID, you're going to develop antibodies. And, you've heard the expression herd immunity. So I think what's happening right now is this Delta variant, this mutation, which my Origins of COVID report, I think, proved that it came out of that Wuhan lab, and they wreaked devastation across the world with this virus. But I think what you're going to find between the vaccinated population and unvaccinated being exposed, developing the antibodies, that we're going to get to that what they call herd immunity, where we're going to be a lot better off.
All right. Well, Congressman McCaul, I really appreciate you taking some time to visit with us this afternoon and kind of give your opinions and your insight about the situation. I know, obviously, not great times, but you know, it always helps to have your voice on the matter.
Well, Josh, thank you so much. I look forward to coming back.
Well, thank you very much, sir. And that was U.S. Congressman Michael McCaul visiting with us, a member of the House Homeland Security Committee and the top Republican on the Foreign Affairs Committee, discussing the situations in Afghanistan and at the U.S.-Mexico border.